virtual options, May 7th.
She's a killer queen, got that agility.
At the Horseshoe Amphitheater, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Scholarship is available. To sponsor, make a reservation, or for more information, call 432-699-1261. Or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert. Call 432-699-1261 or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 62 and mostly cloudy. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 60s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Thank you for listening to Enabled this week. I will be reading an excerpt from a new book about America's first woman doctor, Elizabeth Blackwell. She had an encounter with conjunctivitis in 1849 that was quite horrific, as you will now hear. To set things up for reading the book, this is a brand new book titled The Doctors Blackwell, How Two Pioneering Sisters Brought Medicine to Women and Women to Medicine. The book was written by Janice Nomura and published earlier this year in 2021. It's about Elizabeth Blackwell, the first American woman to receive a medical degree. She received an MD from Geneva Medical College in Geneva, New York, quite near Rochester, where this program originates. Elizabeth officially became a doctor, and then she decided to go to Paris to further her education at a training school for midwives called La Maternité. The other Dr. Blackwell mentioned in the title of the book was her younger sister, Emily, who followed in Elizabeth's footsteps at a later time. In this excerpt, however, you will hear about the older sister, Elizabeth Blackwell. Another sister named Anna is also mentioned in the excerpt. Now, it was highly unusual that a brand new doctor would want to train with midwives, but Elizabeth Blackwell sought intense training in obstetrics, which she certainly got at La Maternité in Paris in 1849. In addition to the expert training she received in just a few months, she also had a very frightening experience with an eye disease that you most likely have heard about. It almost changed her life and actually could have changed the course of history. I'll be reading from Chapter 7, which is titled Setback. On the first Sunday in November of 1849, Elizabeth was working upstairs in La Maternité's infirmary, trying to ignore what felt like a little grain of sand, as it were, in one eye. This was a quote. She was too busy to attend to it, and her mind shied away from its probable cause. In the pre-dawn dimness that morning, she had been making the rounds of the newborns. One of them was suffering from purulent ophthalmia, an aggressive form of conjunctivitis, contracted when an infant passes through the birth canal of a woman infected with gonorrhea. As she washed the tiny little affected eye, the contaminated liquid splashed into Elizabeth's face. By evening, her left eye was swollen, and when she woke up the next morning, her lids were stuck together with a gummy discharge. Elizabeth requested to retreat to her sister Anna's new rooms on the Rue de Fleurus in Paris until her eye was better, but such coddling was beyond the rights of the students. She then sought the opinion of Hippolyte Bloat, who was a young attending physician, and he wasted no time confining her to a bed in the students' infirmary. it was soon clear that both eyes were compromised. Today, though the danger of such an infection eating through the cornea is taken seriously, gonorrheal conjunctivitis is easily treated with antibiotics. In 1849, it was cause for profound concern. Though he kept his fears to himself, Dr. Bloat knew that his friend was in real danger of losing her sight. Hippolyte Bloat and the faithful Clarice Millet made Elizabeth their highest priority, taking turns by her side for 3 days. It was fortunate that Elizabeth felt so warmly toward her attendants, because the treatments to which they subjected her were torture. They cauterized her eyelids. They syringed her eyes with the medicated eyewash known as collyrium. A pharmacopoeia of the period mentions everything from rose water to ammonia to sulfuric acid as possible ingredients. They applied leeches to her temples. They painted her forehead with mercury and hellebore. They administered mustard plasters, purgatives, ointments of belladonna and opium. Elizabeth lived on water and broth, her eyes enormously swollen, her sleep interrupted every 2 hours as Dr. Bloat peeled away the opaque membrane forming over the more severely infected left cornea. It was all very far from the cold water fresh air regimen that Elizabeth preferred, which in this case was probably lucky. Had she been in any position to direct her own treatment, her future as a physician might have ended right there in Paris. Anna, this is her older sister now, Anna received unprecedented permission to visit Elizabeth 3 times a day. The patient appreciated her sisterly attentions, but Anna was not a natural caregiver. Here's a quote, "For the first few days after her illness began, I wept almost the entire time." This is a quote from Anna. "The next few days I spent in something very like swearing, and up to the present time have indulged in an equal amount of both." She informed the rest of the Blackwells with a telling error that Elizabeth had contracted prurient, P-R-U-R, rather than purulent ophthalmia, and bemoaned, as she said, the great laws of solidarity that so sternly link us all in one, and so frequently make the noble and the good share in the penalties of the ignoble and the evil. Aggrieved that virtuous Elizabeth had been laid low by her degenerate patients. Though she was grateful for the special care her sister was receiving, Anna flew straight to Baron du Potay for advice, and was soon adding her own treatments to the regimen, giving what she called the magnetic influence as much credit for Elizabeth's progress as the devoted efforts of the hospital staff. There's a little note here about Baron du Potay. He is known for practicing what was called mesmerism at the time. This blended science and the supernatural. And here's a quote from her. "I have frequently found her in such excruciating pain that speech was impossible, and a paroxysm of nervous distress and pent-up feelings forcing her from fortitude and making her weep bitterly," Anna wrote. "In 5 minutes, setting my whole soul into the effort, I have had her sleeping quietly, unconscious of pain." Whether this animal magnetism was imaginary or not, the comforting presence of an older sister, her soothing touch, and the cutlets and fruit pies that Anna brought to supplement the hospital fare were powerful positive forces, both for Elizabeth's health and for Anna's own sense of purpose, much as she might bemoan her own martyrdom. She says, "I have indeed lost again almost all the flesh I had gained of late in consequence of this outlay of vitality," Anna wrote about her treatment of her sister. "Thank goodness for du Potay." This is the person who practices mesmerism. "Thank goodness for du Potay," she insisted, "without whose constant aid I could not have borne a tithe of all this fatigue and anxiety and the exhaustion which follows my constant action upon poor Elizabeth's eye." What she lacked in unflappability, Anna made up for in journalistic gusto. Elizabeth's left eye looked nightmarish, and Anna did not spare the home folks. much depended on the integrity of the cornea. For, Anna explained, here's a quote, if the portion mortified should suddenly detach itself, the probability is that the eye would at once empty itself through the hole. She seemed at least as fascinated by Elizabeth's condition as she was horrified. The pupil, she said, presents, just now, the appearance of one of those little misshapen blackberries of three granulations, half dried up, that one sees so often on some scrubby little bush. If you can fancy such a one in dull-looking lead, you just have the appearance of her poor eye. Scar tissue on the surface of the cornea had to be cauterized repeatedly so as not to abrade the underside of the eyelid. Throughout the ordeal, Elizabeth maintained a superhuman degree of stoicism. For a woman who hid her own ailments, the situation was a particularly exquisite misery. Not only was she in unimaginable pain, but her curtained sickbed stood in the middle of her own workplace, with her colleagues witness to every aspect of her helpless plight. Their tearful concern was not always easy for her to bear. Here's a quote, she is even sometimes almost tormented by the great number of little kindly meant visits, Anna wrote of the midwife's attentions. She continues, great is the regret expressed on all sides that she should have missed such a nice operation, one of them said, and missed such an interesting case, another one said. The enforced idleness was maddening, and beneath it lay the terrible fear that she would never be able to see an interesting case again. Between agonizing treatments, Elizabeth remained relentlessly optimistic. There never surely was a case of this disease round which such perfectly admirable conditions could have been united, she declared, grateful for Monsieur Blount's tireless attention and Mademoiselle Mallet's deft fingers. She insisted that she could feel her eyes, quote, working and pumping and setting things to the right. This confidence, however, was based at least partly on ignorance. Anna said, we do our utmost to keep her from suspecting the alarms and anxieties which any little change of symptoms creates. After 3 weeks of darkness and pain, Elizabeth's less affected right eye began to clear, and her confinement began to ease. One of her first acts was a gift for the tireless Dr. Blount, who would soon leave La Maternité to open his own practice. With Anna's help, she purchased a pair of lamps for his new consulting rooms, which sent Dr. Blount into an ecstasy of gratitude he could only express obliquely, as the institution frowned on personal interactions between an attending physician and a student, even when the student had a medical degree herself. Elizabeth, quote, I do admire his delicate conscientiousness, she said. His solicitousness was a powerful medicine for Elizabeth's self-regard, if not her actual vision. Quote, he admired my braid of long hair, she wrote, and wondered how fingers without eyes could arrange anything so beautifully regular. At the end of December, Elizabeth dressed for the first time since the injury, and with her eye bandaged and her head swathed in a veil, she slipped from the door of La Maternité into a waiting carriage. The hospital register records her departure by saying she was on unlimited leave. This is a designation that would keep her record free from a stain of failure, even as it closed this particular door firmly behind her. In her memoir, Elizabeth made it seem as if she were ill in the hospital for only a few weeks, when in fact it was closer to 2 months. She always hated to admit physical weakness. It was only a few minutes to Anna's rooms on the Rue de Fleurs, opposite the western gate of the Luxembourg Garden, but even that was exhausting. Anna led Elizabeth upstairs, where she could no longer make out the details of the ceiling ornaments and the tasteful wallpaper, nor could she admire the view. A quote from Elizabeth, I felt very weak and laughed hysterically the whole evening, Elizabeth confided in her journal, writing mostly by feel. She could discern the light of the lamp as through a thick mist, she said, and tell when a hand was passed in front of her face, but not much more, and that was with her good eye. It would be the middle of January before she was able to venture outside on Anna's arm, heavily veiled in black lace, and stepping carefully over a crust of frozen snow through the gates of the park. Here's a quote, "I felt as if I could defy the cold of Siberia, and I rejoiced in every breath of the fresh, sweet air," she exulted, her writing larger and looser than before. "I never smelt a summer nosegay of more soul-rejoicing odor." Inactivity was taking a toll on her health. She said, "I never was very fat, you know, but now I am ridiculously thin," she wrote. "The anatomy of my neck is very unpleasantly displayed." Elizabeth's conviction that God was her most faithful colleague never faltered. She said, "I suffered according to a grand and beautiful law that the highest must suffer for the sins of the lowest," she wrote, implying somewhat startlingly that her sufferings, Christ-like, would help to redeem humanity. Her belief that God was more powerful than anything medical science could offer was entirely explicit. And given the limited pharmacopoeia of 1849, belief in God's support remained a powerful drug. The excerpt ends with a quote from Elizabeth, "He fills me with a spirit of hope and confidence that reacts continually against the disease and which will finally cure the eye." You have just heard the story of Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell's experience with gonorrheal conjunctivitis in Paris in 1849. The excerpt was from the book called The Doctors Blackwell, How Two Pioneering Sisters Brought Medicine to Women and Women to Medicine. It was written by Janice Nomura and published earlier this year in 2021. Well, thank goodness we can fast forward to the present time, 172 years. What follows is an article about modern-day conjunctivitis with a quick break to another source to bring you details about gonorrheal conjunctivitis. So with a sigh of relief, I bring you information from WebMD website about conjunctivitis, or pink eye. This was published on March 4, 2020. Conjunctivitis, also known as pink eye, is an inflammation of the conjunctiva. The conjunctiva is a thin, clear tissue that lies over the white part of the eye and lines the inside of the eyelid. Children get it a lot. It can be highly contagious. It spreads rapidly in schools and daycare centers, but they say in modern times it is very rarely serious. It is very unlikely to damage your vision, especially if you find it and treat it quickly. When you take care to prevent its spread and do all the things your doctor recommends, pink eye clears up with no long-term problems. So what causes pink eye? Several things could be to blame, including viruses, including the kind that cause the common cold, bacteria, irritants such as shampoo, dirt, smoke, and pool chlorine. It could also be caused by a reaction to eye drops, or it could be an allergic reaction to things like pollen, dust, or smoke. It could be due to a special type of allergy that affects some people who wear contact lenses, or it could be caused by fungi, amoebas, or parasites. Conjunctivitis sometimes results from a sexually transmitted disease, an STD. Gonorrhea can bring on a rare but dangerous form of bacterial conjunctivitis. It can lead to vision loss if you don't treat it. Chlamydia can cause conjunctivitis in adults. If you have chlamydia, gonorrhea, or other bacteria in your body when you give birth, you can pass pink eye to your baby through your birth canal, or, as you just heard, to the doctor who is present at delivery. Pink eye caused by some bacteria and viruses can spread easily from person to person, but it isn't a serious health risk if it's diagnosed promptly. If it happens in a newborn baby, though, tell a doctor right away, as it might be an infection that threatens the baby's vision. Pink eye is not an official medical term. Most eye doctors would probably associate the term pink eye with mild conjunctivitis caused by bacteria or a virus. So let's move on to what are the types of pink eye. First of all, the viral strains are the most common and may be the most contagious forms. They tend to start in one eye, where they cause lots of tears and a watery discharge. Within a few days, the other eye gets involved. You might feel a swollen lymph node in front of your ear or under your jawbone. The next type of pink eye will be those bacterial strains, and these usually infect one eye, but can show up in both. Your eye will put out a lot of pus and mucus. And I think we better take a break right now from this article from WebMD and switch to another article from Britannica. This article gives lots more details about gonorrheal conjunctivitis that Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell had. Bacterial invasion of the conjunctiva is less common than a viral infection. Infection is through direct contact with an infected person or through a person's own nasal or sinus mucus. Eye discharge is generally thick and colored, as opposed to the watery discharge of viral conjunctivitis. The organisms most commonly responsible for a bacterial conjunctivitis in humans are the Staphylococcus germ, the Streptococcus germ, and the Haemophilus influenzae, which may invade the respiratory tract or brain coverings. Gonococcal conjunctivitis, invasion of the conjunctiva by gonorrhea organisms, was once common among newborn infants who became infected during delivery. This infection can cause blindness if not treated promptly. It is prevented by routine application of antimicrobials to each eye of an infant after delivery. Gonococcal conjunctivitis can still be transmitted by sexual contact, however, necessitating treatment with systemic and topical medications. Now, just a note here, I didn't mention in the excerpt I read that Elizabeth Blackwell eventually had to have her eye removed and replaced with a prosthesis, a glass eye, from gonorrheal conjunctivitis. Next, we come to another type of pink eye. We're going back to the WebMD article now. Giant papillary conjunctivitis is linked with the long-term use of contacts or an artificial eye, an ocular prosthesis. Doctors think it's an allergic reaction to a chronic foreign body in your eye. Next, we have the question, what are the symptoms of pink eye? And they say they depend on the cause of the inflammation. They could include redness in the white of the eye or the inner eyelid, swollen conjunctiva, more tears than usual, a thick yellow discharge that crusts over the eyelashes, especially after sleep. It can make your eyelids stick shut when you wake up. Another possible symptom could be green or white discharge from the eye. You could have itchy eyes, burning eyes, blurred vision. You could be more sensitive to light. You might even have swollen lymph nodes. Often happens in a viral infection. So when should you call your doctor? Well, make that call if there is a lot of yellow or green discharge from your eye, or if your eyelids are stuck together in the morning. Call the doctor if you have severe pain in your eye when you look into a bright light. Should call if your vision is obviously affected by the pink eye. You should also call if you have a high fever, shaking, chills, face pain, or vision loss. These, by the way, are very unlikely symptoms. Call your doctor right away if your newborn has pink eye, as it could permanently harm their vision. Your eye doctor may tell you to come into the office to be seen immediately. If you can't reach your eye doctor, call your primary care doctor if the pink eye is mild in an adult. If your symptoms remain mild but the redness does not improve within 2 weeks, you need to consult your eye doctor. So next we come to the section called How Doctors Diagnose Conjunctivitis. Don't assume that all red, irritated, or swollen eyes are pink eye or viral conjunctivitis. Your symptoms could also be caused by seasonal allergies, a sty, iritis, chalazion, which is an inflammation of the gland along the eyelid, or by blepharitis, which is an inflammation or infection of the skin along the eyelid. These conditions are not contagious. Your eye doctor will ask you about your symptoms, give you an eye exam, and may use a cotton swab to take some fluids from your eyelid to send away for a test in a lab. That will help find bacteria or viruses that may have caused your conjunctivitis, including those that can cause a sexually transmitted disease or an STD. Then your doctor can prescribe the right treatment. If your doctor tells you that you have pink eye, you may want to ask these questions. There are three of them. You can ask, is my pink eye contagious? Another question, if it's contagious, how do I avoid spreading it? And the third question you should know the answer to, do I need to stay home from work or school? So next we come to the section called, what's the treatment for pink eye? And the treatment depends on the cause. If the pink eye is caused by a virus, it results from the viruses that cause a common cold. Just as a cold must run its course, the same is true for this form of pink eye, which usually lasts from 4 to 7 days. Remember, it can be very contagious, so do everything you can to prevent its spread. Please note that antibiotics will not help anything caused by a virus. If your pink eye is caused by bacteria, including those related to STDs, you'll take antibiotics in the form of eye drops, ointments, or pills. You may need to apply eye drops or ointments to the inside of your eyelid 3 or 4 times a day for 5 to 7 days. You would probably take pills for several days. The infection should improve within a week. Take or use the medicines as instructed by your doctor, even if your symptoms go away. Next, if your disease is caused by irritants, for pink eye caused by an irritating substance, use water to flush the substance from your eye for 5 minutes. Your eye should begin to improve within 4 hours. If your conjunctivitis was caused by acid or alkaline material, such as bleach, immediately rinse your eyes with lots of water and call your doctor right away. If your pink eye was caused by allergies, conjunctivitis tied to allergies should improve once you get your allergy treated and avoid your allergy trigger. Antihistamines, either oral or drops, can give relief in the meantime, but remember that if you have dry eyes, taking antihistamines by mouth can make your eyes even drier. See your doctor if you think your pink eye is due to an allergy. Your eye doctor may have you return in several days to make sure your pink eye is improving with the medication prescribed. So next, you may be wondering, what can I do to relieve the symptoms of pink eye? A lot of it comes down to cleanliness. And by the way, that was one of the big things that Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell believed in back in 1849. A lot of it comes down to cleanliness. Wash your hands often with soap and warm water, especially before eating. Keep your eyes clean. Wash any discharge from your eyes several times a day using a fresh cotton ball or paper towel. Afterward, discard the cotton ball or paper towel and wash your hands with soap and warm water. Here's a good one. Wash or change your pillowcase every day until your infection goes away. When you do the laundry, clean your bed linens, pillowcases, and towels in hot water and detergent. Keep your own towels, your own washcloths, and pillows separate from others. And don't touch or rub your infected eye with your fingers. Use tissues if you must wipe them. Next, don't wear and never share eye makeup, eye drops, or contact lenses. Wear your glasses and throw away disposable lenses, or be sure to clean extended wear lenses and all eyewear cases. You can use a warm compress, such as a washcloth soaked in warm water. Put it on your eye for a few minutes, 3 to 4 times a day. This eases the pain and helps break up some of the crust that may form on your eyelashes. To wrap things up, we ask the question, what are the complications of pink eye? This is in modern times. Usually, pink eye clears up on its own or after you take any medicines your doctor prescribes with no lasting problems. But some forms of conjunctivitis can become serious or sight-threatening because they can scar your cornea. These would include conjunctivitis caused by gonorrhea, chlamydia, or certain strains of the adenovirus. If caused by a virus, pink eye gets better in 2 to 3 weeks. If caused by a bacteria, antibiotics may speed up that process. Well, to summarize today's program, after hearing the frightening story of Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell's experience with conjunctivitis, I hope you have acquired a respect for the modern form of the disease and its treatments. To end the program today, I have a quote for you to think about from Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell herself. She once said, "None of us can know what we are capable of until we are tested." Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 63 and cloudy. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 60s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by the Georgia Radio Reading Service, GARS. Hello, I am Melissa Wood, and this is Shape and Women's Health. I'll be reading from the May edition of Women's Health. We will start with Liz's letter. This is the letter from the editor. Welcome to the Adventurer's Issue. There was admittedly some wishful wanderlust thinking involved when the Women's Health editorial team dreamed up this theme a full year ago. Entrenched in pandemic life, each of us dutifully donned our masks, avoided crowds and limited travel in our collective desire to help flatten the curve. Fast forward to spring, and here we still are, but with hope on the horizon. But the truth is, we found safe ways to reimagine travel when the world felt oh so small. We discovered adventure in our backyards and neighborhoods, and on road trips by exploring paths in nearby parks, and learning to sweat in snowshoes and cross-country skis for the first time. We climbed up newfound trails in our home states and felt almost as epic as trekking through Europe. Editors began hashtagging their Instagram photos, hashtag WH Hiking Club, and we lived vicariously through one another's pictures. Fueled by a longing for fresh air and new scenery, we discovered that joy and beauty can happen anytime and anywhere, as long as we brought some wide-eyed, open-hearted curiosity along for the ride. Planning an adventure, even one that's mini in comparison to the trips around the world or the country we once enjoyed, positively impacted our mental health, that's for sure. The more creative we got, the more powerful the effect. Read our feature on page 83 for the proof. I have a lot of feelings about the past year of pandemic living, wrote fitness editor Lauren Del Turco on her personal IG, captioning a hiking picture with her husband and puppy. The short of it is, movement is a celebration and a beautiful opportunity for self-discovery. All of the yes. Someone else who's been on quite a path to self-awareness is cover star Lucy Liu. She shares her discovery that sometimes the most rewarding adventures happen at home, page 90, and how it can involve starting a new hobby or habit. Yep, it can be that simple. Planning and anticipating a journey can be almost as pleasurable as doing the thing yourself. According to research in the journal Psychological Science, daydreaming is a source of joy if we know good things are coming. And travel is an especially awesome thing to look forward to, don't you think? So consider this issue your inspiration for exploration, starting with all of the good stuff waiting right outside your own front door. That concludes Liz's letter. The editor-in-chief is Liz Plosser, P-L-O-S-S-E-R. There's a photograph here of her. She's wearing a backpack, and there are mountains in the background. She's standing on rocks, and you can see a grassy area behind her. She is holding up her fingers in a peace sign. She's wearing sunglasses and smiling, wearing shorts and a t-shirt. The caption reads, "Mountains are tops for adventure, but this year I learned I don't need to be in Colorado to make sweaty memories." At the bottom of this page, it says, The Best in Beauty. Our Beauty Awards Spotlight, Next Level Products. See all the winners at womenshealthmag.com/beauty-awards-2021. From the perfect post-Peloton glow to a chic hand sanitizer to the best body, face, hair, and makeup merch. I want it all. It shows here Tarte SEA Breezy Cream Blush, $27, Sephora.com. Noshinku Hand Sanitizer, $10 at noshinku.com. And Odasite Jasmine Whisper Body Oil, $58 at Nordstrom.com. The next article is part of hashtag WHStrong, The Reset. And the title of the article is Reflection is the Gateway to Habit Change. This is by Keisha Jean-Baptiste, HR exec, mom of two, open book. Keisha's in the midst of a year-long health reboot and is sharing all, every step of the way. There's a picture here of Keisha, and she's wearing a purple rain jacket with a green t-shirt and black stretch pants, athletic pants with a stripe around the ankle, and she's wearing these bright tennis shoes. They're neon blue and neon green, and there's a little sign by her that says, think hard on your why for certain behaviors, and it gives us the description of what she's wearing. The Gap, she's wearing the jacket is from Gap.com. Athleta is the tank, that's Athleta.com, A-T-H-L-E-T-A. Nike pants, Nike.com. Fila sneakers at Fila.com, F-I-L-A. And Adidas Jewels earrings at AdidasJewels.com. And the article begins, I've never been much of a full meal eater. I've always been a snacker. That preference was only magnified during the past year. While working at home, my snack habit went from manageable to major and started to feel a little out of control. So I began working with nutrition expert Shauna Manai Spence, RDN, at the Nutrition TEA, to figure out how to have a healthier relationship with food. I initially asked Shauna for help with bloating, as it feels as if my stomach fills with air between morning and noon. In fact, when I look at this photo, I just see bloat. Much as I hate to admit that, I want to be transparent about my struggles, the great thoughts and the negative ones. But what I discovered is that her advice would lead to so much more. When I told Shauna how much I love chips and french fries, but that I was ready to go on a cleanse, do intermittent fasting, whatever she said would work, she suggested that I not do any of those. Instead, she said the most counterintuitive but brilliant thing, eat what you want. Don't give up cravings and don't eliminate foods. Pair chips with a protein like peanut butter. Prepare meals that lean into my salty and sweet palate. A new fave, flatbread pizza with peaches and balsamic vinaigrette. And pay attention to what's happening around me as desires hit. Stress? I want comfort. Stat. When life moves fast, it's hard to stop and reflect, like to truly think about your habits. Now that I'm re-examining mine, I'm settling into sustainable change, and it feels really good. Six-pack, is that you? That concludes the article, Reflection is the Gateway to Habit Change, by Keisha Jean-Baptiste. Is under the category hashtag WHStrong Visionary. Changemaker. Through books like Super Attractor and You Are the Guru, self-proclaimed spirit junkie Gabby Bernstein inspires women to pursue their dreams while never losing sight of her own. I teach and practice the method of focusing on small right actions to get toward a bigger goal, she says. When you add them up, your goals become effortless. A few such small right actions Gabby is concentrating on now. What's on my vision board? My podcast, Dear Gabby, at number one on the Apple charts. A stage in front of a live audience. Speaking is my art, and it's been too long since I did this. And the beach. I'm so ready to travel and sit by the water. There's a photograph here of Gabby. She has long blonde hair. She has loose necklaces, a thin white blouse, and the caption reads, Gabby Bernstein, number one New York Times best-selling author and motivational speaker. At the bottom of the page, it says, the sleep accessory that changed my Z's. I cannot live without my Chili Uller sleep pad. It's Bluetooth operated and lets me set the temperature on my side of the bed. I've been going through fertility treatments and sweating a lot at night, which sucks. With the Uller, O-O-L-E-R, I put it to 73 degrees, which is the best number for me, and, like magic, no more dripping through my pajamas. Achieve it. My 2021 goal is to finish my ninth book, which is about finding happiness. I'm getting it done with these tips, which, FYI, will work for any focus-related intention. Use them all. Number one, establish a ritual. Coffee is part of my writing routine. When I sit down at my desk in the morning with a mug by my side, my brain knows it's time to write. I've published 8 books so far, and every new chapter begins with a sip of coffee. Settle on a ritual that gets you motivated. Write it down and commit to it. Number two, be uninterruptible. This is the best advice I've ever received for clearing blocks of time and removing obstacles, courtesy of my friend, memoirist Danny Shapiro. Decide what time you're going to do something and add it to your calendar. Turn off your phone. Get childcare or any other necessary support at that time if possible, so you can be truly unbothered by distractions. Number three, speak it. If you're having a hard time putting something into words, say it out loud, or go outside for a walk and press record on your phone's recording app. Take the topic you're stuck on and just talk about it into your phone for at least 15 minutes. Then head back to your desk and transcribe it. I promise this works, especially if you're a talker like me. Fill in the blank fun. When I think about the future, I feel optimistic because I believe we're moving in the right direction. That concludes the article, Changemaker, by Gabby Bernstein. The next section is Get Going Guide. It starts with warm up, bike bonus. If your commute is starting to look more like an actual commute, not just a trek from one room to another, take the opportunity to turn it into an adventure on two wheels every so often. Switching to a bike or walking just once a week can significantly cut down on carbon emissions, according to a study in Global Environmental Change. Intimidated? Mark the cycling day on your calendar so you're committed. Off you ride. There's a photograph here. This article was on top of the whole picture, but it has a yellow background and the seat is black. The frame of the bike is white and teal with a yellow stripe around the frame, and then you can see part of the tire. It's up against a black wall, so the turquoise and yellow colors really pop here. The photograph is from Danielle Daly, Daly, D-A-L-Y, and the caption says, a little change goes a long way for you and the earth. The next section, still in fitness, says squat switch. This is under technique school. Same old squats getting snoozy. Say hello to your leg day shakeup, the lateral squat, which puts emphasis on your quads, inner thighs, glute medius muscles, think side butt, hamstrings, and calves. It's lower body work from all the angles. The steps. Number one, stand with feet wider than hips, knees and toes pointing forward. Number two, keep left leg straight, shift weight into right heel, Push hips back and bend right knee until thigh is parallel to floor. Keep hands and fists in front of chest. Number 3, press through right foot to reverse movement and return to start. Number 4, repeat on other side. Do 3 sets of 10 to 12 reps on each side. And they show a woman demonstrating this. And so she's has her knee bent, one knee bent and one leg straight. Her hands are clenched up underneath her chin in like a fighting position. And it gives you tips here. It says, watch for a sleepy core. Engage abs and avoid pushing torso forward. And this arrow points to her abs. Then an arrow points to her knee. Watch for caving knees. Keep bent knee tracking over the middle toes of the foot beneath it. Hot tip. Perform a few sets to warm up before lower body workouts or combine weighted lateral squats with an upper body move like bicep curls for a full body burn. So the source for this squat switch section was Bettina Gozo, CPT, Nike Master Trainer. Workout Wanderlust. Satisfy your travel desires with some of the most beautiful virtual settings on the planet. Cardio lovers can run or bike through New Zealand, Patagonia, and Hawaii using iFit, the software you'll find on Nordic Track bikes and treads. Meanwhile, Supernatural, a cool new gamified fitness experience available via the Oculus headset, transports your body weight moves to Ethiopian volcanoes or the ruins of Machu Picchu. And getting sweaty with a view, even a digital one, comes with legit body benefits. Looking at a pretty setting on a screen can keep your feet from dragging, says an International Journal of Stress Management study, which means you may want to sweat longer, harder, and more often. If virtual reality makes you woozy, or you prefer to keep workouts low-tech, just deck out your space with favorite photos from past trips or a poster of your dream getaway location. Ah, transported already. The source for the workout wanderlust was Thomas G. Plant, PhD, professor at Santa Clara University, psychologist and lead study author. Still in fitness, hands full. Hiking is a fire cardio workout by itself, but a pair of trekking poles will help you reach new heights. Walking with these fancy sticks will make the effort feel easier, substantially reduce strain on your joints, and improve balance, according to a review in Wilderness and Environmental Medicine. Just a few little benefits. Grab a choice pair here. Number 1, Leki, L-E-K-I, Vario carbon poles are stable, secure, and oh so comfy, thanks to extended handles and women's specific sizing. From $200, leki.com. Number 2, Black Diamond trail cork poles are up for adventure through all seasons with natural cork grips and interchangeable tips. $110, blackdiamondequipment.com. Number 3, Cascade Mountain Tech aluminum folding trekking poles are adjustable, durable, and easy on your budget. $40, cascademountaintech.com. Number 4, REI Co-op trail breaking trekking poles have adaptable aluminum shafts to match you to the slope angle. $60, REI.com. The source for Hands Full is Ashley Hawk, research associate at Northern Michigan University. On the next page, still in fitness, Tech Check. Behold, these digital darlings from our second annual Fit Tech Awards will help you exercise more strategically in every way. There is a photograph behind this section of Tech Check, and it's a close-up of a dumbbell, and there's also a picture of a Garmin and a picture of a smartwatch. And the caption for this reads, "Time to walk. Use this feature of the Apple Watch's Fitness Plus app to go on a head-clearing stroll." People like Dolly Parton and Misty Copeland share stories, photos, and songs in each episode, $10 per month, apple.com. Then back to the tech check portion. Garmin Edge 130 Plus. Cyclists, meet your new ride or die. Its compact GPS computer lets you sync workouts and monitors your performance to make sure you're not spinning your wheels on meeting your goals. $200, Garmin.com. Apple Watch SE. The more affordable version of the gold standard smartwatch offers access to all the tracking features we love. It's water resistant to 50 meters, so it'll be your warm weather companion. $279, Apple.com. Carbon. Use this AI-powered home system's connected weights as the intelligent mirror tracks your movements and calibrates accordingly, like a trainer who's always there, ready to offer the best advice and cues. From $1,995 plus $39 a month subscription, carbontrainer.com. This photograph is by Danielle Daly. Still on this page, there's a section that says, map out your moves, with a quote. Despite living and breathing fitness all day, every day, I found it hard to plan my workouts lately. So when Peloton released a feature that allows you to stack multiple classes, I practically fist pumped. Now I string together the perfect sequence of a warm-up, a workout, and a good stretch, and let the instructors take it from there. Effortless. This is from Lauren Del Turco, fitness editor. What we're sweating with. Three apps and platforms we can't get enough of right now. The first one, the app says the words Social Club in rainbow letters. It's called Social Club Play. The creative sequences set to dance music on this streaming platform are so enjoyable that you'll forget you're actually exercising. Seriously. $20 per month. socialclubny.com. And then the next app shows the letter T, but the top bar is a teal color and the middle line going down is a black. So it almost looks like a letter I with a line over it. But it says training with T. Tatiana Lampa, CPT, is the type of trainer you want holding your hand when you start a new fitness journey. Her progressive workout plans are beginner-friendly and easy to follow. $20 per month, trainingwitht.com. The next app says BY space SJ, all in capital black letters. By SJ, SoulCycle Master Instructor Samantha Jade is here to be your exercise hype woman via her own app. Her Pilates-inspired mat classes are game and body changers. $30 per month. SJADENYC.com. Head to womenshealthmag.com/fittechawards for a full list of winners. And that concludes the tech check section. Now under food. Flower power. Raise your hand if you took up baking recently. So, everyone. Well, it's time to step up your game with flour alternatives that pack loads of nutrients. These four subs are just as worthy of pantry space as the classic all-purpose stuff. This page is another bright yellow page, and it has four measuring cups of different kinds of flour, and the measuring cups are bright colors. The top one is bright green, then there's a light blue and a royal blue and a red, and they all have different kinds of flours. So the top one is oat flour. Made from ground oats, this flour has the same benefits as your morning bowl. We're talking tons of heart-healthy fiber and anti-inflammatory beta-glucans that help you feel fuller longer and show your gut some love. Just swap in 1 1/3 cup of it for every 1 cup of regular flour. And it says, with an arrow to the oat flour, manganese magic. Oat power is full of the brain healthy mineral. Then the light blue cup has quinoa flour. Chances are you already know how nutritious this grain is. It's one of the few plant-based complete proteins, and the flour version is no different. Try using half all-purpose flour and half quinoa flour to ease into it, or with baked desserts, go all the way and sub it completely. The Royal Blue Cup is white rice flour. Gluten-free peeps, we've got you. This is also what you can thank for your fave rice noodles and mochi. Next time you whip up a batch of pancakes, replace 1 cup of all-purpose flour with 7/8 cup of rice, white rice flour for added magnesium on your plate. Then the red cup is full of green banana flour. Before you ask, no, it won't make your breads and cakes taste like bananas that much. It's made from ground green banana skins and flesh that have a lower sugar content than the riper kind, and the banana-y taste is minimized during the cooking process. Grab that soluble fiber, which is clutch for digestion, with this one. And the arrow pointing to this flour says, potassium perfection. A cup has 99% of your daily needs. The source for this is Amy Lee, MD, Head of Nutrition, NUCIFIC, Nucific. Then it says at the bottom, breadwinner. Put those newly discovered flours to good use with this hearty rice flour and walnut bread from dietitian Maya Feller, RD, CDN, a specialist in medical nutrition therapy. Combine 2 1/4 cups white rice flour, 1 cup oat flour, 3 tablespoons egg replacer, we like Bob's Red Mill version, 3 teaspoons palm sugar, 1 1/2 teaspoons salt, and 1 teaspoon baking soda in a medium bowl and mix with a whisk or fork. Beat 3 eggs, 3 tablespoons of walnut oil, and 1 teaspoon apple cider vinegar together in a medium bowl. Fold wet ingredients into the dry mixture. Activate 2 1/4 teaspoons of dry yeast by combining with 1/2 cup of lukewarm water. Add activated yeast to the mixture and mix well until combined. Add 1/2 cup of dried unsweetened cherries and 1/2 cup of crushed or chopped walnuts. Form a ball, place the dough into a bowl and cover, letting the dough rise for 90 minutes. Heat oven to 375. Remove the dough from the bowl and form into a loaf. Then make 4 cut marks into the dough. Place loaf into the oven and bake for 20 minutes. Reduce the oven temperature to 350 degrees Fahrenheit and bake for an additional 20 minutes. Let cool and enjoy. This photograph that I described was also made by Danielle Daly. And that concludes the food article, Flour Power. The next section is Good Dogs. The source for this is Marissa Meshulam, RD, MPM Nutrition. Hot dogs don't have the best health rep, true story, but now it's easier than ever to find low-sodium hot dogs made without added nitrates, preservatives linked to cancer, and with high-ingredient organic meat. Look for grass-fed or pasture-raised on the label. A few to shop just in time for the summer. Applegate Organics Uncured Turkey Hot Dogs. For a lean poultry option, this is seasoned with cardamom, coriander, and ginger. Delightful. 365 organic uncured beef hot dogs. Most similar to a traditional dog, these Franks have a short list of ingredients, the main one literally being organic beef. No mystery meat here, friends. Upton's Natural Up Dog. Vegans and vegetarians will love this pick that's made of seitan and contains 20 grams of protein. It also has an authentic texture, not too firm, not too soft, just right. Belinsky Spicy Italian with Red Pepper. These flavorful, we're talking serious Italian oomph. Chicken-based sausages are perf for those who steer clear of beef. That concludes today's reading from Shape and Women's Health. This has been Melissa Wood for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a recording library of